From Burrow and Block, welcome to It Makes You Think, a show that explores the crossroads of learning and design. I'm Chris Eisenga, and I'm the co-founder of Burrow and Block, a human-centered design studio focused on products and tools for learning programs and education. Every show, we'll interview thought leaders in these fields and ask them about their work, its impact, and how they're getting wiser. Our guest today is Aisha Khanna, founder of the Acumen Civic Accelerator. Before we begin, I want you to have a little background into my connection with our guest for this episode. In 2011, Erin, my wife and business partner, and I launched a nonprofit called Epic, based on the idea that the best creative talent from fields of graphic design, advertising, marketing, and other creative professional fields would donate some of their time to produce work for nonprofit organizations with limited marketing abilities or budgets. It was a success, and somehow, word of what we were doing made its way to a newly formed social enterprise accelerator called CivicX. It was about this time that we were starting to see an uptick in the number of accelerator programs in the marketplace, but the idea of launching one with the intent of supporting social enterprise, be they for-profit or non-profit, was something that just really had not been carefully explored yet. And this is where our story begins. A representative from CivicX called me to ask if Epic would be interested in participating in their program. And we said yes, and a rapid learning experience into the world of lean startups and entrepreneurship suddenly presented itself. The woman in charge of this program is our guest today, and I got to meet her back in 2012. Aisha Khanna is the founder of the Civic Accelerator, and in the spirit of entrepreneurship, the program itself has undergone some shifts and pivots, growing from 10 cohort members to over 130 since 2012. Going on to collectively generate over $95 million and reaching nearly 19 million people globally. Aisha, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Chris. I've really been looking forward to it, and it's just great to join you.
Let's start by sharing with everyone who you are and a bit about your experience.
Sure. I'm the founder of the Civic Accelerator and have recently joined Acumen, which is a global nonprofit changing the way the world addresses poverty. Acumen launched Patient Capital and Impact Investments about 20 years ago. They've really been a leader in the field. And Plus Acumen is a global learning platform and the world's school for social change. So we're so excited to be part of Acumen, and we are now the Acumen Civic Accelerator.
We met because Epic was selected to participate in Civic Accelerator's second cohort, and at that time, it was a part of the Points of Light Foundation.
Yes, exactly. And it's been such a great journey. You were part of the early cohorts, Chris, and we now have 146 alumni in our portfolio, and we were excited to grow as part of Points of Light, but felt that the Acumen global platform, their digital learning, would allow us to share our content, share our learning and experience far broader. So after I was at Points of Light for 10 years, and the Civic Accelerator was there for about seven, but we just recently spun out the program and the team and just joined up with Acumen.
Tell us a little bit about the impetus for Civic Accelerator, because you were one of the founders, as I understand it.
I'm the founder of the Civic Accelerator, yes. And, you know, I've worked across sectors, Chris, for-profit, public nonprofit, and, you know, my work, and I've worked in a lot of different fields over 20 years. And so I really came full circle as part of Points of Light. I was a president there. I led innovation and the Civic Incubator. And as part of that role, we were asking, where are these innovative ideas coming from? And because of the Points of Light's mission, we were particularly focused on how do you drive civic action and engagement? And where are the new waves emerging where people are connecting in different ways and moving the needle on these social issues, and what might be a way that Points of Light can support and be catalytic to help these solutions grow and scale. And so it was after traveling around the country, learning more about, you know, all of the tech and mobile accelerators from Y Combinator and Techstars to others, that we realized that we could bring over the tools and methodologies from tech and mobile into social impact, and that Points of Light had a national and global reach. So we could leverage our assets, all of those relationships that we have with corporations, and support these social innovators that were rethinking the way that people can drive change, tapping into human capital, and addressing these deep, challenging, complex issues that we're facing as a society.
The Civic Accelerator was, as I understand it, the first accelerator and investment fund in the country that was focused entirely on civic ventures.
That's right. We were also one of the few that was focused on supporting both nonprofit and for-profit ventures, very focused on diverse founders that had deep domain expertise, and experience with these issues, and you know, we're not typically seen in any of the accelerators, and continue to not have the kind of resources or have access to resources, and certainly not venture capital. So we were unique in that we were investing in both for-profit and nonprofit. And we also were very committed, as you may remember, going through the program to peer learning and the peer investment model. We took a page from Village Capital. And so you know, creating a strong bond, delivering these multidisciplinary modules to support entrepreneurs on this journey, and then being very diverse in who was part of the cohort, the partners that we brought to the table, and ensuring that we had a third-party evaluator that could also tell us, are we making a difference, and is the interventions that we're providing truly accelerating the impact of these social enterprises?
As you are getting this idea started, as with any enterprise, you show up and you've got some assumptions, right? What were some of those assumptions that were challenged right there at the kickoff?
It's meta in a way. There were all types of assumptions. You know, would the tools and methodologies translate to social impact enterprises? Would for-profit and nonprofit enterprises learn from one another, and would the tools apply to all types of legal structures? Would companies trust that we could put the investments in the hands of the entrepreneurs themselves instead of wanting to pick quote unquote winners, to allow entrepreneurs to get, behind the curtains with one another, get deep and understanding where folks were across this investment criteria, and for them to make the decision about what's the best investment at this moment in time of this $50,000 investment. So those were all hypotheses. We also had some tactical hypotheses. Would having a $10,000 seed investment that lessened the burden of entrepreneurs to participate make the most sense? And the curriculum itself, what is the best way to ensure that we are facilitating learning, engaging mentors and coaches with another great learning, and then having some virtual curriculum in between those intensive sessions that we hold around the country. So we've evolved our curriculum. We used to attempt to match mentors to our entrepreneurs. Now we engage coaches who come in person and work with our entrepreneurs, immerse, but we also have a network where entrepreneurs who are interested in finding advisors can explore and connect more organically.
I know, having done this, and other entrepreneurs run into this all the time too, that anytime that you start to put this out there and you start to kind of tell the story about what it is that you think that this is going to be, you start to tell the story of the vision, there are always naysayers, aren't there? When you started to share out this idea before it even got its footing, what might have been some of the things that naysayers would have said about this?
Well, one of the things that I wish I had known before getting into this work was a better understanding of how there's so many forces that try to kill innovation. And I had a wonderful mentor, Merrick First. He was the founder of Flashpoint that was affiliated with Georgia Tech. So we went through Flashpoint as we were developing this idea, and he really taught me a lot about how biased we are, how difficult it is to actually see the truth and reality of what is happening in the world, what does authentic demand feel like, and then also, you know, so many insights into all the ways that organizations kill new ideas. And certainly, as one of the few social impact accelerators working from within an organization, I had to go up against a lot of antibodies, and as any entrepreneur does. And so I wish I had known more about how organizations will do anything to preserve themselves as self-perpetuating bodies, and how to be disruptive and effectively transform from within organizations. It's certainly not easy. And so there was a lot of resistance, and it's what makes me so inspired to support social entrepreneurs, because you do have to keep getting up over and over and over again, and failing over and over and over again. And so we heard the kinds of things that entrepreneurs hear all the time, which is, you know, how are you going to sustain this impact? I don't see metrics, enough long-term metrics when you're just very early stage. You know, within an organization, you know, the risks that we had to mitigate, and, you know, why do we want to be making investments in for-profit enterprises was one of the questions we had from the board. But we also had the question of, why don't you just give grants to the nonprofits? Why do you want to make investments in the nonprofits? We haven't seen an effective program across legal structures. How are you going to make that work? And why don't you just pick one and go deep? And, you know, a lot of feedback around partnerships with companies, corporate feedback around, you know, we want to own a program and brand ourselves versus being collaborative and partnering with us. And so there was a lot of, I think, good, healthy resistance out there, because it does force you to experiment in a way and evolve and look at the data and figure out, what is the market telling me? You become a better storyteller, but you're basing that on facts. And that certainly is what our program is based around. It's one thing to go out and enroll and energize individuals in your vision. It's a whole nother and much more powerful to be able to actually show traction and progress, show that there are customers out there that want to buy or invest or subsidize what you're putting out there in the world. And that is so much more convincing if you're able to tell your story that also has actual results, actual evidence from the market.
You know, it's so interesting. I had a conversation with a gentleman recently who was talking about this very same thing, just about how often you're going to hear no, even from people you're not necessarily trying to sell to. It's just, you know, there seems to be like this default to some sort of like risk mitigation, for instance. He says, and you're going to hear no over and over and over again until you start to really build the evidence for your ideas.
Exactly. And this is what has inspired me to do this work. You know, I am just so inspired by people who are deeply committed to solving these tough social problems, and they are on this hill. and it is uphill. It's a lonely journey.
It is.
Sometimes you're, you know, pushing the boulder. Sometimes you're slipping back down. Sometimes you're trying to run. These bold creatives, you know, the ones in the arena, as Teddy Roosevelt described, is such an inspiration. And these are individuals, you know, marred by dust and sweat and blood, and they're coming up short again and again and again, but fighting on our behalf as a society, fighting to solve these complex problems. And that is at the core of what it means to be an innovator and an entrepreneur. And so for me, I really want these innovators to stay at it and to succeed. We need them to succeed. And I have learned so much from working with those innovators myself in order for the accelerator to succeed and to continue to evolve. But that is absolutely the core inspiration for me. And I have seen what a few individuals can do around the world, from a seminal experience that I had in India working in villages to my work with social entrepreneurs. It is that getting up over and over and over again, but also what Merrick First and others have taught us is it's not always believing in what someone is telling you. It's not, you cannot be naive on this journey. It's a long, difficult journey. And so really getting clear about what you're trying to accomplish and what is the world telling you, what is the evidence that you see that tells you you're on the right track, is a very challenging thing to do. We've got to, as entrepreneurs, get out of our bubble and see the reality. And the reality is harsh and it's tough. So no, that has been a wonderful learning and something that certainly we have incorporated into our philosophy and our theory of change. And it's part of what's so inspiring is to work with these incredible entrepreneurs.
What from that lived experience has translated into what you are teaching the entrepreneurs as part of the cohorts?
Oh, it's a great question, Chris. It's and I do think that's part of the opportunity for all of us to be lifelong learners. And it is what made our accelerator a little unique from other programs. I certainly didn't feel as though I was going to stand at the front and dictate the answers to what social entrepreneurs were grappling with. The wisdom is in the crowd. The wisdom is in this group of innovators themselves. And so, I think as we went through the process and tested assumptions, saw that we failed ourselves, tried different things and evolved, that was being translated into our curriculum and our core methodology. We had to be vulnerable and share openly what we were struggling with, and that that was important and critical for us to then be able to co-design together with our entrepreneurs to help guide us to what's the most effective accelerator model.
How do accelerators need to start to evolve?
I think accelerators need to start and continue to evolve in so many ways. The lack of diversity, the lack of diverse racial and ethnic minority founders and women who are supported in accelerators must change. These are founders that have the experience that's necessary to get to the heart of these issues. They may not always have the networks and access to resources, but it is incumbent upon us as intermediaries and investors to change that dynamic and to be intentional about not continuing to reflect the bias and discrimination inherent in our society at large. And so when you see the statistics talking about data, of less than 5% of venture capital going to women or founders of color, it's unacceptable. And these are where solutions must come from. We understand that about diversity, but because of the way that this sector has evolved. We are just too elitist. We're too narrow in the way that we think about who winners are in society. And when you have investors who are looking for founders that look like them, this is what happens. You just continue to perpetuate that bias. So in answer to the question of how must accelerators continue to evolve, I think there is an absolute call for accelerators to be much more open and critical of our own, not just recruiting policies, but how we design the program itself to support diverse entrepreneurs, how we deliver capital, how we recognize and acknowledge that founders don't all have equal access to broad networks and to help have friends and family that can support them and invest in them. And so what does that mean? And I do think there's a reckoning that is happening as companies also begin to ask, what is the purpose of business? You know, we just recently saw the CEO roundtable acknowledge the broader stakeholders. And so I do think there is a reckoning happening to think about what is the role of business? How can we best support and create on-roads and sustain innovation from everyone?
So many of the students that I worked with in Chicago were diverse students and first generation college and every single walk of life. And you can see when you're on that side of the table how the systems have been designed in a way that precludes these individuals.
Exactly. And I do think what we are trying to do as part of the accelerator, and just thinking at large, broadly, we're trying to provide the tools for individuals so they can be more effective in figuring out how to make that change happen.
Yeah.
And whether you're inside an organization or outside, having the courage to stand up, understanding who you need to enroll, how does power work, how do I have a voice? And it's a daily, everyday fight. To be heard and to make change happen, because exactly to your point, you're working against traditional ingrained institutions, and those antibodies come out to kill things that are threatening to those institutions. And so it's not personal. It's the way that bias gets perpetuated.
Would you look back From the time that you were a teacher and educational consultant in New Delhi to where you're at now with Acumen and the founder of the Civic Accelerator, what are you learning about yourself right now? What have you learned? How have you gotten wiser through this remarkable career?
Well, I love this big question. And, as I look back on my career, I have moved across sectors and done so many interesting kinds of jobs with amazing people. And in retrospect, there might be a thread that I can pull there. But certainly in the moment, it was exploring lots of different fields. And so I feel so privileged to have had that opportunity. I love the description of being multilingual and being able to work across sectors and across boundaries. And that's certainly part of who I am, Chris. I'm Indian American. I grew up outside of Philadelphia in a community that was not that diverse, very diverse economically, but not that diverse. And so growing up and being able to cross boundaries and work across different groups as a young child has served me well in my career. And I have worked across sectors and have really enjoyed being someone that's been non-traditional as a hire and a connector and playing a role of strategist. And I did this in India, working in villages in India as a research and teacher. I didn't speak the language very well, but I had great help from colleagues. I had a group of kids that would follow me around in the villages as I was performing the Stanford-Binet test. They'd laugh and they'd correct my grammar. I was very, very non-traditional. I have a master's in psychology, but I worked at a management consulting firm as the only non-MBA. I didn't have a background in nonprofits, but I became, the head of the YWC and United Way, and certainly didn't have experience in community organizing or campaigning, but was able to be a finance director for a mayoral candidate and co-chaired Women for Obama in Atlanta. So I think I've had a greater appreciation for what makes me unique and what talents do I have and what is my approach to life formed by who I am and what my experiences have been, and how can I bring that to bear on the work that excites me and interests me. And and then as being immersed in Lean Startup and working with social innovators, I think some of the ways that I'm wiser now is I don't listen as much to what people say, but I do watch what they do. That's what Lean Startup's all about. So do put things out in the world. Don't just talk and plan. That's important, but it won't drive change. And so I've done more of that myself over time. I think I've become more effective at finding the sweet spot where I'm not compromising the integrity of what I know works, to accelerate founders and ventures with what sponsors or partners want to do and what they value. I can have those conversations more openly. I've learned how to come to the table with more equal power and mutual respect. You know, in some ways I'm less naive, and I've come to understand that the buzz of entrepreneurs and energy they bring is valued by investors and companies. It's not always rational decision-making, but I've become much more grounded in what do entrepreneurs need and how to be clear about that and listen to entrepreneurs and partner with them to co-design our program and constantly learn from every cohort. I'm much more confident in showcasing that diverse founders with different racial and ethnic backgrounds and women who are left out, as we spoke about earlier, of the innovation space. They don't have equal access to resources, that they are the best positioned to solve these challenging social issues. I'm much clearer about that. Feel more committed and confident in my voice, helping them build solutions with meeting, not just the latest dating app, but really helping them address systemic issues that are facing our society. So I just feel more grounded and confident and committed to that. You know, I've also, part of the journey of being wiser, it's been more freeing to see money as a commodity and to recognize that it's the unique impact that we can have on the world and how we accomplish this, that's a value. So it's these entrepreneurs in the arena, as we spoke about, dusty, dirty, getting up again and again, they're the ones who are figuring out how to solve these issues. And so we just need to invest and support commodities in what is truly unique. People with ingenuity and creativity, they're bold and they're fearless. They're the builders that are going to change the world. And so that's provided some clarity. I do think there are people out there solving these problems and have the solutions. We just need to support them and go about it in a very different way than we have been. And I think we can do it. So I'm optimistic.
You have what my friend Sarah Beth Burke has identified as a professional hybridity, where all of these experiences and skills and perspectives of yours have culminated into this approach to entrepreneurship, and it's equipped you to not only aid entrepreneurs in developing and building evidence for their ideas, but also in helping them and the marketplace, for that matter, recognize and reckon with the distribution of power in business. Whether they exist today or they're in development, you're right that a changing society with rapidly changing challenges placed on it is going to demand that tomorrow's companies recognize and deal with the realities of power distribution, and also that they acknowledge and leverage the user as expert, that these individuals and groups are the best ones to tackle the issue at hand, and that it's everyone's job to support and to elevate these leaders. Aisha, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today, but I want to thank you for joining me here and for sharing with us your story and your perspective.
Oh, Chris, thank you so much.
That's Aisha Khanna, founder of the Civic Accelerator, now part of the Acumen Fund. There's some truly inspiring stories springing from this initiative, and you can learn more about these by visiting www.cbcx.org. Thanks again for joining us for It Makes You Think, brought to you by Burrow and Block. You can find other podcast episodes and learn more about the learning and development work we're doing at burrowandblock.com. Today's episode was produced by yours truly with music by Nagoth Music. Thanks for listening in to It Makes You Think.